Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and healthcare. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson. Good afternoon. It's Friday, June the 10th, 2016. Is that correct, 2016? Yeah, I guess it is. Things are going by so fast. One day you're up. One day you know what's going on. The next day you have no idea what's going on. I don't know what's going on. I'm telling you, this is really, well, hey, listen. I don't need to know what's going on because I'm not running for president of the United States. You know who needs to know what's going on? That orange guy. You know, the guy with the orange head. What's his name, Blake? You know, with the orange head.
Trump.
You mean Drumpf. That's his real name, Drumpf. Donald Drumpf. And don't everybody forget it. He might as well be a Nazi. Because after all, his parents were Nazis. Oh, well, I have to, if I didn't put it on a website, I'm going to put it on a website. But I just want to hear everybody here what the commander-in-chief had to say on the, in case you didn't check it out, on the Jimmy Fallon show.
Speaking of Trump, the co-founder of Home Depot recently announced that he is supporting Donald Trump. He wasn't planning to, but when your colors are orange and white, you kind of have to go with Donald. It's supposed to do it. You got to do it. What you think about Trump or Hillary, for that matter, President Obama still has 8 months left in office before his second term is up. Naturally, this is the time to look back on all he's accomplished over the past 8 years. You know, I was going to make a joke about this, but I don't think it needs a joke. I think it needs to be slow jammed. You know what I'm talking about, Tariq?
Yeah, Jimmy. I think you're saying you like to slow jam this news.
That's right. I want to slow jam the news, and I'm not the only one.
Hello. I'm President Barack Obama, and I, too, would like to slow jam this noose.
Hit me eight times!
It's been an honor and a privilege to serve as your president over the past 8 years. When I first took office, our nation was facing one of the worst recessions in its history. Since then, we've added more than 14 million new jobs and lowered the unemployment rate to under 5%. Through the actions of my administration, we were able to stimulate the economy and get our country back on track.
Oh, yeah. President Obama stimulated long-term growth. Both the public and the private sector. In 2008, the country wasn't feeling in the mood. It was too tired, stressed, said it had a headache. Barack lit some candles and got some silky satin sheets.
Silky satin sheets now.
Told the American people, yes, we can.
Yes, we can. It's all right. He created tons of jobs for you and me. And he's got one more left for Hillary.
As president, I'm proud of the many progressive steps our country has taken in recent years, both socially and environmentally. The United States has been a leader in developing clean energy to ensure the health of our planet for future generations. Thanks to the Affordable Care Act, an additional 20 million Americans now have access to quality health care. And same-sex couples across the country now have a constitutional right to marry. In short, climate change is real, health care is affordable, and love is love.
Commander and preach! You gotta listen to my man, Barizas. He's accomplished a lot in 8 years. Even when Congress tried to block him, he found a way in through the back door. When Republicans gave him lemons, he made so much lemonade, Beyonce started calling him Baracky with the good hair.
Baracky with the good hair. His first 2 terms ended in such a hurry. Wish he could go for 3 like my man Steph Curry.
Now, there will be no 3rd term. I can't stay forever. Besides, Daddy's got a Hawaiian vacation booked in about 223 days. But who's counting? That being said, the American people face an important decision this fall. The entire world is watching, and they look to us for stability and leadership. Now, I know some of the presidential candidates have been critical of my foreign policy. I don't want to name any names.
He's talking about Donald Trump.
But I believe it is of the utmost importance to work alongside other world leaders. That's why I signed the Iran nuclear deal. That's why we reopened diplomatic ties with Cuba. And that's why I negotiated the new trade deal called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP.
Now, hold on there, Fred Dispenser. Are you saying you're down with TPP?
Yeah, you know me. Look, Jimmy, the TPP allows American businesses to sell their products both at home and abroad. The more we sell abroad, the more higher-paying jobs we provide here at home. It's that simple.
So what you're saying is this trade deal will help put everyday Americans back to
work, 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 work. Put it back to work, 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 work. You put it back to
work, 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 work.
Now, Mr. President, since you're here, I gotta ask, have you been watching all the election coverage this week about Donald Trump?
No, but I have been watching my new favorite show. Orange is not the new black.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm gonna need you to Netflix and chill. I get it if you're a little wound up after all this time. I mean, I can't imagine what it'd be like to do the same job for 8 straight years.
Jimmy, you probably never will.
Does Obama care cover burn?
America's best days are still yet to come.
Thank you, Mr. President, for all that you've done. Slow jam the news.
Oh, yeah.
Give it up for the President of the United States, Barack Obama. Just the last time. We'll be right back with more of the Tonight Show. Come on, everybody.
Well, I tell you what, there will not be another man like that around for a long time. It is my great pleasure to introduce next Supreme Court Justice for North Carolina, Mr. Judge Mike Morgan. How are you, Judge?
Hello. Michael, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing well, I'm doing better. That's you. What's that?
I said, thank you for having me back last week's Friday show and having me back this week today. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're the man. I mean, you know, you're going to be on the Supreme Court. There's no doubt about it in my mind.
I like how you project it. Thank you. I'll take it.
You know, what is, in case people weren't listening last week, why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, thank you for
again,
that.
Incidentally,
sure, and while I was waiting to come on with you, I really enjoyed that piece with the President last night with Jimmy Fallon. I saw it last night as it was unfolding, and the president has a real sense of humor, and his time is impeccable.
It is impeccable, and he does a deadpan. I mean, Jimmy Fallon was breaking up on a few spots, and they said the satin sheets and coming in the back door, he was just cracking up, and President just stood there deadpan. I know he wanted to laugh, but that's the second time. I was looking for the other piece, but I didn't get a chance to look for the other piece the first time he was on. He was on Jimmy Fallon's show, so that's the second time, but I really enjoyed it, man.
It was funny. I didn't know the president was. I didn't know the president was down with TP. That was something too.
You know me. He said, "You know me."
Yes.
So I mean, but tell us something about you. Tell us something about you.
Sure, I'm glad to. I am a Superior Court judge elected in Raleigh, and that's where I am right now. And I have been serving on the Superior Court bench, having been elected and reelected for a total of 11 years now running. To that 11 years on the Superior Court bench currently, 10 years as a district court judge in Wake County, and 5 years prior to that as a state administrative law judge. So overall, over 26 years of experience on the judicial bench. That's professionally in the courtroom. Also judicially outside the courtroom, but in the classroom, I've been teaching other judges from across the country at the National Judicial College as a faculty member, that institution being located on the campus of the University of Nevada. So that has been for 24 years. So that 24 years in the classroom, coupled with 26 years in the courtroom, same judicial experience, both academically as well as practically, in terms of knowing what it's all about to be not only a judge, but to be an effective, fair, and impartial judge.
Well, let me just ask you that before you go on, I don't want to interrupt you. I didn't want to interrupt you, but you said something very important. You were in the classroom. Now, what sort of, because I used to teach and I know, you can look at it, there is no difference between a fifth grader, a seventh grader, and a college graduate who's in a graduate class. They think more universally because they have more things that they've seen. And I've noticed this when I was teaching middle school up to the ninth grade, then taught college at John C. Smith here as associate professor. I was teaching kids who were graduating communication. And they asked the same questions. They didn't ask it the same way because they didn't have the sophistication, the words, the knowledge to ask, but they asked the same questions. Now, what can you tell us about these? What was the course anyway? What was the course that you were teaching?
Well, I teach out there a number, but the overall course that I teach, and I've taught several, but the one I've concentrated on quite a bit is Administrative Law Advanced, where I've got judges who touch upon whether they are hearing officers, whether they are reviewing judges, whether they are Superior Court judges like I am, or even if they're Supreme Court justices, in terms of those that have an impact on the law that comes from agencies in terms of reviewing those cases, and then not only on the first step level, but as they go on through appeals as well.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to hold it right there, and I'm going to play something for you, and I want you to give me your what your feeling is about it. Then I want you to continue where you just left off. Okay, now, because there's several things I want to play here for you, and I want it from a perspective of teaching law and those students in the classroom versus what people outside, like myself or somebody else, perceive how the law should be. Because there is a major difference. How we perceive the law is how we interpret it and what the law is actually. And we see this right now with Donald Trump. He does not know the law. And if he does know the law, he's always gotten away with forcing the issue to turn around to his direction. But judges are there to follow the law. They're not making any money if they don't follow the law. They're doing their job. So the grievance that some people have against a judge because he made or she made this decision is really something that you can go back on your appeal, or your the lawyer you have with you should make some objection. But there's no objections to what the judge is doing. What does this lawyer's client have to say about it? I mean, to me, it just boggles my mind. And there's a lot of people out there that will automatically say, "Oh yeah, the judge is wrong." Well, you know, just like everybody, there's biased judges, and they're going to rule the way they want to rule. We can take, and I'll take Clarence Thomas. We just had a case 2 weeks ago where Clarence Thomas was the only one that voted against this. I believe it was the decision with on discrimination. I believe it was, and. I have to look it up. But anyway, I want to play this short piece right here, and I'll get back to it.
Four simple words are engraved above the doors to the United States Supreme Court: equal justice under law. That's supposed to be the basic promise of our legal system, that our laws are just and that everyone, will be held equally accountable if they break those laws. Now, look,
Now, can you give us some comment on that, what Elizabeth Warren just said? And she was a professor of law at Harvard. Can you explain that to the listening audience, what she meant?
Well, just taking it on the face of it, equal justice under law, just looking at those plain words for starters, if something is equal, then that means that it is applied evenly with everyone getting the same amount of consideration, people, that's all of us, regardless of race, gender, ethnicity, sexual orientation, that it's everybody. And under the law would simply mean that the law, again, is available to all to be that uniform standard of rules and regulations and provisions by which we can all look and say, well, this is what it is. This is what is said to apply to the situation in which I find myself, and I have a right to have it applied to me regardless of who I am, and it's going to be applied evenly and fairly and impartially to me as it would be to anybody else. So I don't know exactly what was in her mind as she explored it and don't know what she said before that or what she said after that. But certainly on the
paper, I'm going to play that for you so you can. Yeah, I'm going to play that, what she meant after that. But does this ever, did this, or did equal justice under the law, she says it's engraved on the top of the in the Supreme Court, I don't know, the outside, the inside, somewhere. But anyway, the thing is, when you look at your students, and we're talking about administrative law, we're talking about, but you see, it's still equal justice under the law, no matter what situation you're in. I mean, do you ever get the idea that some of them don't really understand that the law is the law, and no matter who you are, you have to follow the law?
Oh, certainly. And everyone, certainly, especially a judge, but when you say that to anybody, if you ask a judge, if you ask a fellow juror, if you're on a jury panel, if you ask anyone involved with the system of justice where one is going to make a decision, can you be fair and impartial? Oh, sure, right. I can, is going to be the response. That's just natural, because we often don't understand that, number one, we can't change who we are. And we all have a makeup. We all were brought up in a certain environment, which may have caused us to have certain feelings, certain biases, certain ways of looking at things. That's just natural. You can't change who you are. But what we try to do, and what I certainly try to do when I'm teaching other judges from across the country, is how to understand that you've got to use that colloquialism, you've got to check yourself at the door. Because whoever you may be personally, politically, spiritually, socially, economically, whoever makes you up, you have to check that at the door of the courthouse. Because when you come into the courthouse and ultimately into your courtroom as a judge, you have to put all of that aside as much as you humanly can and look at this evenly and equally in terms of equal justice under law. As a matter of fact, one of my segments that I teach, Michael, is within the parameters of my course to talk about understanding that we all belong to certain frameworks within society. We've got a race, we've got a gender, we've got a religion perhaps, a sexual orientation. We all have an economic status, no matter what it may be, high or low or mid-range. We all belong to organizations and belong to other types of concerns and situations which may make us differently in our makeup from somebody else. You know, I know you mentioned Johnson C. Smith. You know, I know there's some rivalries between Johnson C. Smith and A&T and NCCU and perhaps some others.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's somewhat of a way of looking at some things, but you got to understand that, you know, no matter whether you're a golden bull or whether you're an eagle or whether you're an Aggie, you know, you got to check that at the door if you're going to say that you're going to be fair and impartial, if you're going to look at somebody who may not be of the same orientation that you are. And so
yes.
we try to understand and teach judges to understand that if you recognize these aspects going forward, then you'll understand that you've got to make sure that that does not come into the play whatsoever in terms of doing what you have to do as a judge. So yeah, check yourself at the door, scan yourself, make sure that you're not going to let some orientation that you have that is one that's personal to you further to spill over into your professional life. You've got to be even and apply the law equally to all.
Well, you know, and you explained it so you explained it great, what it means under the law for everybody. No one should be treated differently because they have more money. No one should be treated differently if they have a different sexual orientation or they come from a background that a foreign background. They're not part of the they're not an American citizen yet. But yet, you can join the United States Army and get killed and not get the same place in this country. You can not have the right to vote. They didn't have the right to vote in 1865, African Americans, and they were fighting on the side of the North. They still couldn't vote, even after the war. So the thing is that why would someone, and I don't know if the question has ever come up in your classroom, if someone is of a different race than you, and this person is a judge, why should you say, I can't be judged by this person? Because if you're on a jury, you're judging someone. You're making the decision. It ain't the judge. The judge is handing the decision to the jury. So you are the judge. You are a judge. Every person that sits on a jury is a judge. Am I correct?
To a great extent. In a jury trial, the jury decides the facts.
Right.
Then, once the jury decides the facts, then the judge will operate concerning the law. And during the course of the presentation of the facts, and this is where the judge does have influence, Michael, in terms of the jury trial situation, the judge will entertain objections as to whether or not an objection should be sustained and overruled. And to some extent, that's where judges may be seen as influencing the outcomes of cases, be it legitimately or not legitimately, because of the ability of the jury to hear certain testimony or see or hear certain evidence that may come into play. It may be somewhat akin to a referee in a basketball game making a call that may take away a basket because let's say that the player charged while making the basket. Well, that's somewhat of an analogy to a judge perhaps making a ruling that where one side may be in a position to make some points, so to speak, with the jury.
Yeah.
If the judge says, well, the jury's not going to hear that, then in effect that's taking those away that side would otherwise be able to score, so to speak. And I'm not certainly trying to be little.
Well, yeah, but you're also saying that the judge is trying to also make it fair for both sides. And that's equal justice under the law. Because maybe they should not hear this particular testimony because it is not as partial for the defense or partial for the prosecutor. So the judge has to make the decision, which is equal justice. What's balance here? We have to make balance on both sides.
Right. And that's where the rules come in, because again, everybody knows what the rules are. Right. And I'm certainly not trying to trivialize in terms of using a basketball game as an analogy.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, that's part of teaching, though, is you try to find common ground so it simplifies concepts with those concepts that people readily identify with. So, you know, say, you know, carrying forward with the basketball analogy, players know, and I used the block and charge situation earlier, everybody knows that there's a block and a charge rule.
Yeah.
Well,
yep.
You get close calls sometimes, just like in the law, you get close calls sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And folks will look at the referee. Well, you call it. You know, was that a block or was that a charge? Judge, was that a testimony that should be allowed in or not allowed? And if the judge is up on his or her knowledge of the rules, then he or she will apply those rules and make a ruling with the lawyers and the parties ultimately understanding call was based upon the application of that rule that applied to that circumstance. And that's where judges can influence cases. And when I say influence, again, I'm not saying that in a negative way, but sometimes if certain evidence is allowed or disallowed, that may make the full difference in what a jury ends up coming back with as a verdict, just as a basketball referee may make a critical call in a basketball game.
Well, you know, but and we have Thomas Fortenberry, our associate producer, joining us. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, how are you?
We have a situation sometimes where the rules, the law is set in stone, and yet it's bad. So the judge then can make a decision whether or not that rule is bad. Now, in some places, they handcuff the judge where the judge can only go one way. Like three strikes, you're out. You stole a cigarette.
Right,
so
where they take away judicial discretion on how much time they could assign someone or something of that.
Right, right. So, I mean, how is that talked about? Judge Morgan, how is that talked about? The way judicial discretion or on rules that are evidently right on the face are wrong. The law is wrong, but you still have to go along with the law. And how is that done?
Well,
we've had plenty of them.
the legislature makes laws, the judge interprets laws. In terms of our three branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial, a judge has to know how to stay in his or her lane in terms of doing what a judge is supposed to do. So if there's a law and, you know, the law can, you know, perhaps be dubious or perhaps on its face, like you say, may be questionable, but the judge is not one who makes laws. The judge only applies the laws. So in that sense, if there's a law that is perceived to be bad or wrong or has an application that just doesn't seem to fit societal interests, then it's up to the legislature to change the laws, and sometimes people have to be involved in terms of being active with their legislators to let it be known that this is not operating properly, it's not operating correctly, it's bad on its face or it's bad in its application or whatever the situation may be. Judges just have to do what we do to make sure that we are, on one hand, applying the law to the facts, and ironically, you mentioned the word discretion, where there is discretion for a judge to somewhat maybe make up the difference if the law is what it seems to be in application of a particular case. Perhaps the judge can ameliorate reduce the effect of the application of that law based upon how the judge is applying it within his or her discretion. Now, again, as I heard it well said, sometimes judges don't have discretion. It is going to be what it's going to be. And perhaps that's where it's the most stark where you get results that are undesirable. But otherwise, if a judge has discretion, then perhaps there can be some application to that law in a way that doesn't make it quite as bad or wrong as it might otherwise appear.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a, as I said, there was going to be a follow-up to what I was saying, what equal justice under the law. This is what I was saying. This is what Elizabeth Warren said.
What kind of a man is Donald Trump? Donald Trump says Judge Curiel should be ashamed of himself. No, Donald, you should be ashamed of yourself. Ashamed. Ashamed for using the megaphone of a presidential campaign to attack a judge's character and integrity simply because you think you have some God-given right to steal people's money and get away with it. You shame yourself and you shame this great country. We are not a nation that disqualifies lawyers and judges from public service because of race or religion or gender or because they haven't spent their entire careers representing the rich and the powerful. We are the nation of John Adams, a lawyer who defended the British soldiers after the Boston Massacre and then went on to serve as President of the United States. We are the nation of Abraham Lincoln, a lawyer who defended accused killers and then went on to serve as President of the United States. We are the nation of Thurgood Marshall, a lawyer who fought for racial equality and then went on to serve in the Supreme Court of these United States. We are the nation of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a lawyer who fought for gender equality and went on to serve in the Supreme Court of these United States. That is who we are. And we will not allow a small, insecure, thin-skinned, wannabe tyrant or his allies in the Senate to destroy the rule of law in the United States of America. We will not. We will not. You bet. You bet. Ready for this fight because it is time to fight again, as it has been time to fight in every generation for those four simple words that define the promise of our legal system: equal justice under law. That's what we're here for.
Well, I think
well,
that's
you know,
you were.
You can't say it better than that, Mike.
Well, hey, I don't think so. I got you back, Judge. You dropped off for a minute. Did you hear? Were you able to hear the whole thing?
Yeah, I lost it for maybe about a minute, but I certainly got the essence of it.
And as you said, equal justice under the law. And there wasn't equal justice under the law until segregation ended in the South. I mean, but in some instances, there still is not equal justice under the law. As we see with this last case, with this judge let off this, well, let him off, get him, I did, might as well let him off, the guy that raped the girl.
Right.
Now,
there are 6 months
cases,
of
right, yeah, instead of 6 years or 10 years, what are you supposed to get? But, so, we don't know why, and we can't surmise what was in the judge's mind.
Well, let me just say this one thing, Mike,
yes,
about that.
Go ahead.
I think two separate things are we're talking about at the same time. I think in that judge's case, besides the fact that his ruling, his discretion may have been wrong, you know, too little or whatever, is still in his discretion. However, in that particular case, as more information is coming out, the latest thing I've read is that he was a personal friend of the family, a very good friend of the father. So in that particular case, I think not only was he ruling extremely lightly and doing, you know, that, he should have recused himself. He should have removed himself from that case. Because if you're personally involved with one side or the other in a case, I think that that would prohibit you from being a fair and balanced judge. So in that particular case, I think it's wrong.
Yeah, but again, why didn't the defense lawyer do that? Ask for that.
Well, I mean, that's, I don't know if they knew or didn't know or whatever, but the judge should have instantly removed himself from being able to sit on that case if he knew one party or the other personally. You know what I mean? That's just, to me, that seems wrong. Now, that aside, what you're talking about earlier with race, with Donald Trump attacking this judge, I think the case you're bringing up of civil rights specifically is a wonderful way to highlight this. The very reason we need and should have as much diversity as humanly possible in the court system, where there's men, women, any religion, any race, any anything, is to help keep fair, balanced, wide-ranging, multi-experienced, nuanced views on that bench. That's exactly why you want to have as many different types of people as possible, of every background, high, low, everything in society, because it helps in the blind, fair, and balanced view of justice, because you're coming from every point of view. And in that way, something as broad as gender, race, or religion should never matter. And that's the judge's job, is to be impartial. You know, otherwise,
yes,
we can just say, like, broadly, you know, no Christian can ever be judged on a case where Christians are involved, you know, in stupid things like that. So, but anyway, those are two separate points. But
Judge Morgan, what do you think about what was just said, what Thomas just said?
Well, I certainly agree with the lion's share of what he said. Mm-hmm. If there is a judge who has personal knowledge of a situation that is before him or her, then certainly recusal is appropriate. It's not only important to have the rendition of justice, but also the appearance of the rendition of justice, which is what gives the public and certainly the parties involved the feeling that justice indeed is being implemented.
Blind.
And if it's and blind, yes. And if one is associated with one side or the other in any way, then that's going to cast aspersions upon the rendition of justice. There are too many of us judges that are available that can be even and right down the line in terms of being able to be fair and impartial, so that somebody doesn't have to say, well, I do know one side or the other, so as a result, I'm going to go ahead and stay in anyway because we don't have enough judges to go around.
Right.
What a judge would typically do would be either A, recuse himself or herself, or B, say, I know this side or the other side, or I have this interest seen as making me biased or not able to be fair or not able to be impartial. I want you to know this ahead of time before I even begin to hear the case. And if either side has concern, if you lodge that concern now on the record, then I'll respond on the record as to whether or not I feel I should recuse myself or not. So those are the two ways in which one typically
And that's done no matter what court system you're in, whether you're in the municipal court or the Supreme Court. That's done the same way, isn't that correct?
Fairness and impartiality is part and parcel of what a judge would do on any level. Certainly, I believe that. And lastly, there was something made in terms of what was said before I began talking concerning the ability to have diversity on the bench. There are seven justices on the Supreme Court of North Carolina. That's one big reason why I'm running is the fact that there is no African-American male on the Supreme Court bench currently. That is a voice that is sorely lacking, especially when you consider all the attention that's been paid to the African-American male in the criminal justice system. So, indeed, seven justices should represent diversity in the state of North Carolina in terms of who and what represents justice on that highest court in our state. And so with that diversity, I am trying to make sure that that diversity certainly does look like scenery of our great state in terms of offering myself as an African-American male so that I can be that presence on the Supreme Court such that people, again, know that diversity is more truly represented with that critical voice represented on the high court.
Well, you know, what you're saying is true. And the thing is, remember what was exactly said to the President of the United States, Barack Obama, when he was senator and he was running. He is going to give all his time to African Americans. And no matter if you're white, Chinese, Indian, no matter what you are, he is going to represent them only. Well, how do you get this out of people's mind that it doesn't work that way? I mean, it does not work that way. It doesn't work that way at all. I mean, and they I know they're out there saying the same thing about you. Oh, well, he's only going to be on there and he's going to help every single African-American that needs to get the go to jail for life, he's going to let them off. He'll in any case that comes in front of him. How do you get around that ugly talk? That's what you're going to do, and that's why you shouldn't be there.
People love labels. People love labels. People love stereotypes, and that is what people tend to embrace because that is the most basic of easy ways by which you do a quick check of what you want to believe. And if you want to believe that, then you just hear it, you see it, evaluate it on its surface and say, well, that's all I need to know. But on the other hand, all I can do is talk about my experience, have those who know my experience to speak about me and for me. The fact is I've been elected and reelected five times. Certainly by now, after over 26 years, if I had some certain way of doing the same kind of case or treating the same kind of person, the same type of gender or race or ethnicity or anybody else, routinely the same way and have such a pattern, certainly that would have been recognized by now and held against me. The fact is that there's some now that I'm running statewide for the first time that are going to have those labels placed upon me. I've seen that already just in the primary election season in terms of some saying, well, he's going to be this way, he's going to be that way. And I've seen those, and I have been frustrated by them, but yet still I understand that that's just the nature of people sometimes. But all I can do, Michael, is just keep continuing to do what I do best, which is to try to communicate with people, demonstrate to people that I've got a transparent, open record, be willing to appear on shows such as yours where I don't know what's going to be asked or what the subject matter is going to be, yet still be enlightened enough and comfortable enough in my own skin that I just appear, say who I am, show who I am, and then let the people decide.
Well, there's a and what you just said is very, very important. And I'd like to play one more little piece here from Elizabeth Warren that she spoke about this.
Now, earlier Earlier this week, I released a comprehensive report on the Republican campaign of obstruction against President Obama's nominees. It details how Senate Republicans have delayed or blocked votes on key nominations throughout the entire Obama presidency. The purpose of this obstruction is to try to hold open federal positions for as long as possible. The purpose is also to hamstring the president's ability to protect consumers and workers, to hold large corporations accountable, to promote equality. In other words, to undermine the fundamental principle of equal justice under law. The centerpiece of that strategy has been a blockade of federal judicial appointments, and it is much bigger than just the United States Supreme Court. From the day President Obama was sworn in, Senate Republicans have used every procedural tool at their disposal to try to slow down his nominees. They spent months abusing the filibuster in a naked effort to preserve a right-wing majority on the D.C. circuit. And after capturing the Senate in 2015, they just slowed judicial confirmations down to a trickle. Judicial emergencies multiply, cases pile up, courts are starved for help, and now the Supreme Court of the United States sits paralyzed, unable to deal with its most challenging cases, all because extremist Republicans who reject the legitimacy of President Obama are determined to make certain our courts advance the agenda only of the wealthy and the powerful. It is outrageous, and it is up to us to fight back.
Now, that's what I was talking about. I don't understand how they can say, and I say they, I mean the people who are in control, especially here in North Carolina, but in other major cities, where they say, you know, we can have 9 whites on our Supreme Court or 6 whites on our Supreme Court, and they could all be perfectly fair. But if you have a woman or you have an African-American or you have any other minority, they can't be fair. Is it because they have been treated so bad throughout the years, or were they just born that way? Not fair.
Mike, that would be a very specific word you're looking for. It's called racism. There is no defense for it. You can't have double standards. It's ludicrous. And it's hypocritical to say that we can have an endless slew of all-white politicians and have fair laws and all white judges and have a fair and balanced judiciary. And yet if we ever have a African-American or, you know, God forbid, what if one of those Trump hating wall climbing Hispanic people from the south of the continent come in, somehow get over the wall and they took over. Oh my God. They're not going to be fair. They're not going to be balanced. I mean, it's just pure racism, and it's stupid. I don't understand what my problem is. I don't understand why they, these extremists, are still able to operate in this country so openly. Like, how does Trump get nominated? How do these fools take over our state and drive us back to 1860? That really bothers me. But it's nothing but racism.
Judge, you have any comment on that?
Well, I can't get into the politics of what Senator
Warren
said.
No, not the politics. I'm talking about just the idea of why one race can be fair, but another race cannot be fair. Because that's what it is.
Well, there's some that would want to stereotype, and I certainly don't want to make it seem as though I'm going to overcorrect and look at it on the other side and say, well, there is no way that folks will accept us that a woman or an African-American can be fair. Indeed, there are a number of open-minded people that are willing to accept the fact that an African-American can be fair, a woman can be fair. I think that's among other reasons why I finished a very strong second with 34% of the vote out of four candidates this past Tuesday and moving forward to the general election in November. Because there are so many open-minded, good people that will accept the fact that I, as an African-American male with the kind of experience I have, would be a sound addition to the high court, Supreme Court. That being said, I revert back to what I said concerning the fact that there are some that are just so stereotypical, they are so shallow in their thinking process, that once they try to read a book by its cover in terms of saying, well, immediately want to take the easy way and find like-minded, shallow-minded individuals and say, well, look, I'm not the only one that feels this way. This person over here feels the same way, too. That's one aspect of social media that brings these kinds of people together, is the fact that they find like-minded people, unfortunate though it is, and feel as though or convince themselves as though they are in some major segment of society, and if enough of them begin to find each other, then it gets to be a problem. But overall, I'd like to think optimistically and positively that there are more folks that have the open minds and shun the stereotypes than those that would tend to be shallow and narrow-minded and try to lump certain categories of people together that they would feel as though, as a result, smart enough or wise enough or intelligent enough or analytical enough or fair enough or impartial enough to be judges.
Well, you know, did you ever see the original film?
What's saying? Oh, God, what am I thinking?
12 Angry Men.
The original, black and white.
Okay. Now, you remember the black and white version. You remember the scene in the jury, because it was about the jury and about the individuals. Every person was individually different. And the problem was that this woman woke up on a hot night, looked through the window to an elevated train that was going by, and through the windows of the elevated train, she saw this young man stab his father. So the question is, well, how could you do that? They come to find out that she wasn't wearing her glasses. And without her glasses, she couldn't see more than 10 feet. And this was at least 100 feet or more. So the idea, one of the, who was supposed to be the bigot on the jury, he says, he's guilty because look at them. They're all like that. You can't trust none of them. They all lie. And Henry Fonda said to him, she's one of them also. Why do you believe her? So the question comes that, and in this case, as you noticed, and because I did a whole class on this a whole year for when I was teaching school, and it was the judge's charge to the jury that set the whole mood of everything. He didn't think about this kid. He didn't even look at this kid. He had a pencil, and he was pounding the pencil, looking down. You heard all the evidence, and when you come back, I want you to come. Ask me. Everybody has to come with a unanimous decision. So come back when you're finished, and that's it. That was some charge to the jury. Man just got murdered. So why do we think that because – I'm not taking we, I'm saying a lot of people think that because they are a certain way, that individual, because that individual is not like you, that individual has to be guilty because They're all like that. How would you, as a judge, try, you're facing a group of people, you're asking for their support, they are not on the verge, they might be on the verge of voting for you, or they might not be. You need to speak to everybody that you can, if you can. What would you say to them why you should be on the Supreme Court in North Carolina?
I should be on the Supreme Court of North Carolina because I am the people of North Carolina. I am one who is a native North Carolinian. I'm one who integrated the public schools. I am one who has gone through the public school system. I am one who has gone to a predominantly white institution, private. I have gone to an HBCU, historically black college or university, that is public. I have worked with all segments of people, be they economically enriched, economically deprived, those that are educated, those that are uneducated, the vast majority of people, and yet still I am able to understand and appreciate society's differences, society's pluses, society's minuses. And as a result, having been able to have the benefit of having gone to law school, having had the chance to be a lawyer, having had a chance to be a judge on three different levels, now aiming for the fourth level, I have the complete panorama of what it takes to understand what it means to be fair and impartial, regardless of my race, regardless of my gender, regardless of my religion, regardless of my ethnicity. I'm going to be, anybody who occupies this seat is going to belong to some categories because we like to pigeonhole folks into categories. But I would dare say that in terms of my preparation, that I would stand with anybody and certainly feel as though I am well prepared after all of these years of experience. I'm 60 years old. I've had a chance to live life. I've been on the block a couple of times, and I'm still standing. I just feel as though with it all that I'm the best qualified, and certainly between the two of us that are left in terms of those that have come through the Tuesday primary, I'm the one who's better qualified. And if one will be open-minded enough, again, going back to what we talked about earlier, Michael, folks say, oh, sure, I can be fair and impartial. I keep an open mind. Well, I would challenge those people to look at my credentials, keep an open mind, evaluate it all, and then regardless of what they think their stereotypes or original thoughts might be about me, if they've got concerns about me, then get past that and study it and then be fair and be impartial in the evaluation, and you'll have to consider me very worthy in that regard.
And Thomas?
Yes, sir.
Thomas?
Yes.
Yeah? Yeah.
Yes.
What do you have you want to ask the judge?
Oh, well, no, I've been quite thrilled with what he's saying. I love the fact that he is just, of and by and for the people, because that's what we need. I'm tired of divisiveness. We need unity. We need to bring back that feeling to the state, especially. And I'm very, very pleased with not to say that, you know, impartiality is the greatest virtue, but to hear him repeatedly say these things. Because in the end, when you're sitting at on the Supreme Court, that is you are the voice of us, and he is there to represent everyone. There isn't any other possibility. So I think that's fantastic, and I'm actually quite pleased with all of his answers. I have nothing more to add to that. I think that it's exactly correct, and I think we do need, if you're going to have to, you know, pigeonhole or label anything, we do need diversity on the court. because right now there isn't much visible diversity. So we do need it. But once there, he is universal. He represents the old, the young, the rich, the poor, the black, the white, the everything. But he is North Carolina. That's it.
Judge, I one of the questions that, and I'm trying to be on the other side of this. Now, one of the questions I would ask you, well, why do we need diversity in the court? If they follow the law, we don't need diversity. A robot can do it.
Well, good point. That's why if it could be done by a robot, you wouldn't need any justices at all. The fact is, however, is that there is a situation where you do on the Supreme Court, you review the record, see if all the I's were dotted, all the T's were crossed, areas where there was discretion, was there an abuse of the discretion? If there is discretion, were the right things put in place on the record to show that the discretion was properly exercised? Again, going back to that analogy I use, in which we can all hopefully identify, talking about basketball. Was that a block or was that a charge? If it was a goaltending call, was the ball still in its upward spiral or was it coming down? Some calls are just so close that you just can't leave it to a robotic decision maker to determine, you know, whether it's feeding the facts into the computer. You know, we'll never know who the greatest team was. I keep on with this basketball analogy. I think we all
right.
The Hornets must be rubbing off on me. I don't know. You know, we will not know if this year's Golden State basketball team or that Chicago Bulls team that won 72 games, the Golden State Warriors won 73, we won't know which one was the greatest of all time, no matter how many facts we try to computer and try to figure that out. Again, if things could be done by robots, you wouldn't need any human input. But the fact is, we know we need that human input, and that's where, as Thomas, if I may call you, sir, by your first name, that's where he is so correct, that when you have diversity and you have humans, then there's that opportunity to have human discourse in terms of talking about some things from different orientations that one brings to the table. That's why if you have a too monolithic or homogenous of a viewpoint represented on the Supreme Court, then there are going to be too many pockets or gaps that don't get considered. As an African-American male, I can help feel that. As one who has been on the bench as long as I have, I can feel some of those being a trial judge, because there's only one other Superior Court trial judge that is currently on the high court. I can feel that void. There are a number of aspects where when you come together, the sum of the parts is greater than the individual parts. So can't do it. It takes human beings, and if there's seven human beings that have places on that court, then I certainly can fill a void there and do it responsibly and intellectually.
Well, you know, you remember in Star Trek, I love Star Trek. There was there's a line in Star Trek that Spock always said, Captain Kirk always said, does the need of the many outweigh the needs of few, or does the need of the few outweigh the needs of the many? Which is well, what do you think about that, Judge? Which one is appropriate? Or are they both appropriate?
Well, you know, you need to have, well, there's some that look at quantity. I think I know where you're going on, and if I'm wrong, please redirect me. But, you know, you can talk about quantity versus quality in
right.
terms of a background or of a responsibility. And, you know, you've got situations where, and I've said this when I've gone campaigning, you know, I've gone before all kinds of crowds, crowds that are vast and those that are small. But my feeling is, I tell folks, it doesn't matter the quantity of people, that you have. It's the quality of the interests that are represented. And those that are here are the ones that really want to be here and can often make a greater difference in small numbers, going out and being sincere and passionate about what is at stake, than as opposed to having a room with an overflow where people are just there curious to see what's going to get said, and then after they leave, nothing gets done.
Right.
So the way I see it is that it's important to be dedicated to understanding how important this race is, that there's a need for diversity on the bench. There's a need for a dedication to one who has a fair and impartial and open mind for any case that comes before the court. And it's not like I'm asking anybody to buy a pig and a poke. I've been doing this for over 26 years and have done it on three different levels. One would feel at some point if I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do, then I wouldn't have been able to achieve on the next level. And this has been a gradual opportunity to work my way through the court system, and I am truly thankful and blessed for it. The fact that I've been able to start at the state administrative law level, then go up to the district court level, then go up to the superior court level, and now be in a position to go potentially to the high court, having already gone now through the primary election of the Supreme Court on Tuesday, and in effect going now to the general election. That's quite an ascension from being a lawyer, working one's way through the ranks, and now being on the threshold of going, so I'm just asking folks to evaluate me. I'm glad for this radio opportunity to meet the people, Michael, that you've afforded me. I've got a website, www.judgemichaelmorgan.com. I'm on Facebook. I hope folks are going to like me on Facebook, Judge Mike Morgan for NC Supreme Court. I'm also on Twitter at Judge Mike Morgan, and there are a variety of ways to get to know me, and it's just a matter of exploring it, and I try to make myself as available as I can, and I'll be traveling the state as well, and I'll be back down in Charlotte like I was last Saturday when I was there, and 2 weeks before that when I was there at a community event. So I'm going to be doing this over the next 5 months until we have that November election.
And you need to tell me when you call me. My phone, I'm up to 2 o'clock every morning. So you can call me anytime. Let me know you're coming to town.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. I don't want to get
you
up the hospital, but I'm glad you're up.
Hey, Mike.
I'm up. Yes.
Yeah, one thing just to throw out, I just wanted to revisit with your quote there because, you know, hey, I'm a Trekkie at heart, but extremely important. And one thing that I've, you know, heard him say over and over in representing the people, but you're talking about the few and the many. One of the key components of our judicial system is supposed to be the fairness and the protections that America has always offered to minorities in all ways. And the law is representative of the majority, but it's specifically designed in America to protect the minority and afford them the protections that the majority have, whether it's your religion or your race or your gender or you know, your, you know, if you want to use a bathroom in North Carolina, say. But you have to be able to afford those protections to the smallest and weakest amongst majority and minority in the same thought, with the needs of the few and the needs of the many. Because that's the whole key to America, is that everyone is equal. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, or you're, there's only 10 of you, or there's 10 million of you, you're all the same, and you have the same rights under the law.
Judge, can you give us that website again?
Certainly. It's www.judgemichaelmorgan.com.
Okay. judgemichaelmorgan.com.
That's
and,
it.
Tell us some of the places you're going to be over the next five months or so, besides Mecklenburg.
I'll be easier to tell you where I'm not going to be, because we're going to be everywhere. Certainly coming down to Mecklenburg. We're working on some things right now. And we're really going to be all over the state because this is a statewide campaign. But, you know, suffice it to say that it's, of course, natural that the areas that are urban in nature certainly will need to go perhaps more times during the course of the next 5 months than
more people,
some of the more rural areas. But we're going to go everywhere because we're going to be representing the people's interest in having fairness and impartiality on the high court. Now that we know that we are through the primary election, going towards November, of course, we were always optimistic. Otherwise, we wouldn't have offered ourselves for service. But we did not make too many appointments and obligations in this campaign beyond Tuesday because we wanted to make sure that, indeed, we were going to be in place to be able to do that. Now that we know that, we're beginning to fill our calendar right now, and we will be coming to Mecklenburg quite soon.
Okay, very good. As you notice, I didn't want to ask you questions that every Tom, Dick, and Harry always ask a candidate that's running, especially a judge. I wanted to get your explanation of what a judge and who a judge is and what they feel. They're just like every Tom, Dick, and Harry out there. They're ordinary people. But they're not in ordinary jobs. It's just the same that, you know, I'm sick of the line, sick and tired of hearing the line. Boy, when you grow up, you could be the president of the United States, or you could be a judge because you talk so well. No, you can't be. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry cannot be a judge. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry cannot be the president of the United States. There's only been, what, 45 of them? Guys, a couple of times they got in 46. So, I mean, that line cannot be used.
You know what happens when you elect anyone into that position, Mike? You end up with somebody that drags a 5-ton statue of his belief into the rotunda of the courthouse and leaves it there. You know, that's what happens. We don't need anyone in that position.
No. I mean, this is being a listen. A judge affects our lives every single day. The president don't affect our lives every single day, but a judge does. And people who are listening out there, you are hearing from a gentleman that has been and done it all. Except for one place as a judge in this state. There is nothing he hasn't done, probably no case he hasn't seen, very few cases he might have missed that he hasn't seen, but a judge who has been fair and been elected starting from the lower courts up to where he is now. There is no reason for him to go not become Supreme Court, just like there's no reason for the Senate not to approve Judge Garland for the Supreme Court when they've already approved him, I think, 4 times already. It's just ludicrous. So we need the first African-American judge on the Supreme Court. And as you have heard from him, he knows what he's talking about. Fairness under the law, which he will bring to the Supreme Court of North Carolina. And I want to thank you, Judge, for coming on and putting up with my not so easy questions, which you've handled with such grace and knowledge, really.
Well, Michael, I appreciate very much the opportunity to be with you again and with your great listeners. And I love the questions because some of them are fairly routine that I've been getting and I know we'll continue to get. But you certainly do make me think about matters about which I need to be reminded. So mm-hmm. thank you so much for that. And I also appreciate Thomas, whom I've gotten to know some at least through this and hope I get to know more as the months unfold, with his valuable comments and insights as well, because indeed knowledge is power for our community. And once we do impart that knowledge, folks begin to have some buy-in as to what's going on. And mm-hmm. before I leave, again, something that Thomas said that's very valuable that we all need to remember, and that is that regardless of, as Thomas noted, economic class, social status, what have you, the vote is the great equalizer in this society because everybody gets one vote and one vote only. And so from mm-hmm. that standpoint, you exercise your right to vote, and you stand tall and proud just like anybody else who goes into that ballot box on election day and casts that vote. So as we move forward to November, I'm looking forward to people continuing to be focused and getting more involved as we look at a very pivotal November 2016 election, not merely for the state Supreme Court, which indeed is monumental, but then down the ballot, there are going to be some critical races, and I hope people will pay attention as we begin to, now that we have a full slate of candidates now, with the primaries being over on this past Tuesday, heading towards November. And Michael, thank you again for allowing me to be a part of your show again today.
No problem. It's a my
and thank you for coming on.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure, exactly. And we're going to have you on again because there's so much knowledge that you have that people need to understand. You know, a judge is not the ogre, and the judge is not an authoritarian, but a judge. And I don't know every single judge. There might be some knucklehead out there or two, but the majority of the time, more than the majority of the time, they are there to be fair and impartial. And we have to remember that.
Exactly.
Thank you, Judge.
Michael,
and I'm going to have you
thank
back.
Thank you again so much. Look forward to it. Take care. Thank
okay.
you so much again. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care, Judge.
Judge Michael Morgan. Judge Michael Morgan. And I want to tell you, we as North Carolinians have to be very proud of having someone with his credentials. I mean, we just have to be.
Also, just the caliber of the person. I'm thrilled that we have choices like this, you know, on our ballot. This makes me very hopeful for our future.
Well, there is a few things that are we need to get started here in North Carolina.
Because, you know, people think that votes don't matter. Well, as I said, that man right there is our future. And by not showing up last time at the election, we've now got to experience what our past is like again. So let's move forward into the future again.
Well, I want everybody to know we only have about 5 minutes left here because I have some things to do. So we're having a shortened show today. But one of the things that's happened in North Carolina, we had the district meetings of the county party. You have your county meetings and you have your district meetings and then you have your state meeting. Well, the North Carolina, I want to read this, the North Carolina chairperson, Patsy Teva Acott, has been served today with a grievance regarding the 13 North Carolina congressional districts, and which was held back in May 21st. They are all unconstitutional. Everything was run according to her direction, and she directed the chairs of each district wrongly, on purpose. The grievance is being served. on those congressional district chairpersons pursuant to the POOH, which is the Plan of Organization for North Carolina. And it's according to due diligence clause. The grievance does not have to be. And here's the other thing. There is something in the Plan of Organization of North Carolina that you, if you have any problem with anything that was done, it has to be done within 10 days. Well, this is not the case, because this was caused by the whole thing being set up wrong. What she did was, there was a file of a redistricting claim here that was filed against the GOP. And they redistricted and gerrymandered all the districts. It went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court in North Carolina said, which I stayed away from, I didn't want to ask the judge this because he will be sitting on the Supreme Court. So I didn't want to ask this question. But the judges on the Supreme Court, 3-judge panel, said, it was wrong. It has to be redone. The lines had to be redone. So the lines were the convention, the district convention was held on May 21st, which was way after the decision. They could have held this election off and switched it by a month, but they didn't want to do that. Because the Patsy Kiva Acock, the chair of the Democratic Party in North Carolina, is a liar and a racist. And I'm telling you that right now. She has lied and gerrymandered her own Democratic Party. That's what she's done. She's gerrymandered her own Democratic Party to get the people that she wanted in. So she operated the district conventions under the old districting that was done and cast aside by the 3-judge panel. She was supposed to do it under the new designation that was redrawn, which was ordered by the 3-judge panel. On June the 2nd, it was ordered that all elections should be held under the new redistricting plan. But Patsy Kiva Acock said no. And it was done under the old plan, and she got all the people out that she wanted. Well, she's now been served with a petition. And we're going to see where this goes now. A grievous petition.
Well, you know, this is strike 400 against her, but anyway, I hope that it goes somewhere.
Strike 400 against her, and, you know, what can you do when you have 400 strikes against you? Hey, we'll see what
happens. Violates the rules year after year.
Yeah, well, hey, that she violates rules. And Thomas, I want give me a call when you get a phone. I got to tell you something else.
Okay.
All right. Coming right back.
Everybody, have a wonderful weekend.
Everybody have a wonderful weekend. And I would did you happen to hear the slow jam the news with the president?
I did not.
Well,
I know that it's out there, and I heard it was hysterical, but I didn't get it.
It was. I played at the beginning of the show, and
nice.
We'll play it again. Play it next week. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. And I'm almost out of here. If I got no music to play here. Okay, yeah, I'll do this.
Have a good
one,
Mike.
All right, everybody. Morning, dead or alive.